I might be the best quitter of jobs you've ever seen in your entire life. The first tax season I lived in Seattle, I went for the Grand Slam and filled out 4 W-2s from various, I don't know if I would call them careers, but it set me up nicely to be nearly unemployable, which is kind of my current standing as well. But this all was preceded by my first job out of college, which was as a radio DJ in South Bend, Indiana, at 95.7 WAOR-FM, South Bend's classic rock, which to call anything classic in the state of Indiana feels a little... because it's kind of just contemporary. I don't know if they moved on from the 70s. I think that they're still trying to vault out of there. But I did enjoy all the spoils that a mid-level market overnight radio DJ of a college town when school is not in session could expect to get. And that stopped and started with a ticket to an Eddie Money concert. So I was there representing the station. And Eddie, I call him Eddie because we're best friends. I've met him once. Eddie's like 45 minutes late. We're getting off the freeway here for a second, but the pinnacle of my time in this job was Eddie Money was 45 minutes late, and when he finally makes it onto stage, it looks like the corpse, the like bloated corpse of Eddie Money has eaten 2 other Eddie Moneys. It's not a good sight, and he's got his shirt buttoned to just north of his navel. I know it's his navel because the material's stretched thin like a, it looks like a trampoline, like he's carrying a small trampoline on the front of himself. And it was so disappointing because it's like, oh, you had such dreams. You know, everybody else was working for the weekend. Or is that Loverboy? I was the classic rock DJ. He did have 2 tickets to Paradise, and now he's got 2 tickets to South Bend. And he's got 1 left over because nobody's coming with any money. But anyway, there was a flash of Eddie Money's time in South Bend that was like the highlight of this job, where he's up there, and I think he's just trying not to die. But then he does, he's got a tambourine, and he does like this lightning fast spin, like an ultra-quick 360 near the microphone, and spins the tambourine on his finger like a basketball. Yeah. And I was like, I felt like I was having a stroke for a second. It was like the scene from Hook where the little kids are rubbing Robin Williams' face trying to look, and finally go, oh, there you are, Peter. I was like sitting in the crowd going, oh, there you are, Eddie Money. I just had to peel away like 3 decades worth of regret to get to you. But anyway, I quit that job because that's what I do. And I moved to Seattle, Washington, mercifully. So, I mean, it wasn't that big a deal for me for the first 6 months that I didn't have work because I just was not living in Indiana anymore, which was like, I mean, starving to death was great. Like, I would rather, you know, not live for 6 months than to hang out there. But eventually, you know, my modest nest egg from a nest egg had run out, and I'm trying to find work. And so I did everything. I was a junior high basketball coach. And, you know, don't let the pillar of fitness before you right now fool you. These kids were learning nothing. I worked for a political campaign for a political party of which I was not a member. I'm moonlit as a pizza delivery man. Right around the same time, my brain broke and decided that I had every communicable and terminal disease on the planet. And so the highlight of that job was one evening delivering pizzas while getting ready for a colonoscopy the next day. And by getting ready, if any of you have had a colonoscopy, you know what I mean. That job ended with me karate kicking open a door and frisbeeing a pizza and going, There's no time. There's literally no time. So quit. And I can't find work. And I'm in Seattle. I'm applying for everything. I'm going to the Rainier Valley and going to gas stations. Hey, how often do you get robbed? Yeah, can I work here? I know nobody else probably wants to. Or you know, any number of things. I'm sending out resumes. And the lowest of low point for me was getting a letter back. And when you get anything back, it's like this moment of hope to go, like, this is how it's supposed to be. And I get a letter back from the city of Seattle. And I open it. And I have applied for a position as a janitor. And I start reading. And it says, "Dear Colin, hey, we're really sorry. But you just don't have the skills that we're looking for the position of janitor." And I'm not to knock the custodial arts. I mean, it's definitely like, it's a serious profession. I'm not trying to knock this. But at the time, I felt a little bad because I had a bachelor's degree and previous experience as a janitor. And so I don't know if that was quite rock bottom. I'm still working on rock bottom. But not long after that, I finally got a job interview for a position, ironically enough, as a janitor. And so this was in Belltown, and I go to the job interview, which was surprising that the janitor position had a job interview, but neither here nor there, I need the money. And so I went, and I didn't really know where I was. So I knock on a door that has bars over the front, and like a little slide window opens up and says, "What do you want?" And it's like a public health building. And I go, "Hey, I'm looking for such and such a place." And they just point across the street. And there's like every transitional homeless person in the neighborhood is hanging out in front of this one spot. And so, I mean, I'm from a small town. I had just been to Indiana for a brief period of time. And now I live in Seattle. This is all very new to me. So I kind of weave my way through the homeless population of that particular block and get in. And before I can even exchange pleasantries with the woman who I'm supposed to be interviewing with, excuse me, there's a drunken telegraph, right? She says, "The position is $9 an hour, no benefits. You want it?" I was like, "You couldn't have called me on the phone and asked that?" "But yes, I want it. I want groceries." And so it was a group home for drug addicted adults with schizophrenia. So it was like, check them all down the list of like things to put you here. So it's a really marginalized population. It's a tough place, but it was not as tough as boiling spaghetti and scraping the dregs of a salsa jar over the top and calling it pasta. So because, you know, without a paycheck, that's what my life had been reduced to. And so it was a tough initiation into the job world, from like a million places to quit. And I kind of started at a baseline level. I had a bus pass because I couldn't afford gas that I had made out of my wife's previous UW ID and a piece of construction paper and an almond roca wrapper to make it look like the shiny sticker. So each morning I just flash the, it was about that fast, just give them the flash. So, and I started working there, and it was really a unique position, because I had such high hopes for what my career was going to be. And then to meet people that were living here, I got to know people that I thought, man, your life at one point had such high hopes, I can imagine. And now here we are together for whatever reason. And there were weird instances where I would catch glimpses of previous lives or things hiding within people. Like one point I was mopping probably pee out of the elevator. And a resident comes in and says, "Smells like pee in here." I'm like, "Thank you," you know? And then he says something about form following function, and I kind of stop and have to ask, like, "What's going on with so-and-so?" And they said, "Oh, you know, he used to be an artist. He used to hang in galleries here in Seattle," and they would show me his art that they had tucked away.
Or another time you see a resident from a distance through a window just breakdancing like crazy and just the most killer moves, you know, comparable to my own. And get closer and open the door and there's no music and there's nothing. It's just inside his head and this is his life. And then to meet a resident who, after knowing him for a while, takes out a picture of a six-year-old daughter and shows it to you. And that their lives had such high hopes, but that here we were all together. And it wasn't all heavy. It was heavy, but, you know, there were times where I would see people looking at me and I'd go, oh, geez, I wonder what their story was, and be curious. And then there were other times to see people and go, ooh, I wonder what their story was. Like being on the elevator with a guy who gives you the shifty look and you have a mop in your hand and you start doing the Eddie Murphy from Coming to America. like you're going to have to use your bow staff skills and escape on foot. But over time, things started to change in me. And I didn't really know what was happening. But I did, kind of looking back on things, see that things were different for me. And so, like, one morning I was on the bus and I thought, this is the smelliest bus in the city of Seattle. I can't believe how awful this place smells. I'm the only one on this bus, and I'm pretty sure I showered recently. But then to look and to see, I've sat down next to the only other occupant of the bus, who is a man who's been living on the street for, like, forever, never bathed once. And so my mentality changed a little bit to the point where I was okay with my employment as the janitor of the mental institution. And then I got the opportunity to quit. I was approached by somebody to say, hey, we really need kind of a glorified chaperone to go to Europe for a month and kind of babysit all these rich kids whose parents work for Jaguar and stuff and basically just kind of hang out and, you know, tell jokes. And then when you come back, maybe there's a job in it for you. So I've just gotten to the point where my hope for my life has kind of been met with the reality of we're all in this together, and now I have the opportunity to quit. So I go to my boss and say, hey, I need a month off. And that's my best poker face, like scratch the ear and the elbow at the same time. I'm not tipping my hand at all. But I say, I need a month off. And she says, like any other rational human being, no, of course not. There's no way a janitor takes a month off straight. Do you know how much urine goes through this place a day? And I will never forget that she took and went across the facility and said, you're going to give all this up? Like she was like it was Oz coming in color. Like, you're giving all of this up for a free trip with rich people in Europe for a month? And I wanted to say, with all due respect, I would give all of this up for like a free bus transfer to Tukwila. Because she was talking about the $9 an hour and no benefits. And what she didn't know was that there was no way that I could give all of this up for anything. And in fact, I've moved on from several jobs since then, and I've still never given any of it up. So, thanks.